We're holding on. I infest some of Bay's six lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of discussing the matter. The mission had told us that you have a number of cases where blood of Carbonus gets mixed in with other liquids or with other blood. And what happens, when do we say that it's still valid to sprinkle on the Mizbeach and when not? The last thing we talked about in that connection is that Rabbi Yehuda, we've been discussing the matter of Royin. When do we consider the other liquid to be as though it was a different liquid, and that would have implications as far as when it's mevatalit and when not. For example, in the Mishnah we had where the blood of the carbon falls into or gets mixed in with wine, where had it been water, it might have been enough to dilute the color so much that it doesn't look like water, that it doesn't look like blood anymore. But with wine, you wouldn't have that. So the Mishnah had said that Royin, we have to consider the wine as if it was water, and then figure out would this be enough water to be mevatel the appearance of the blood. So now the last thing we said was that, for example, when you have a container full of liquids and you're dipping it in the mikveh still with the liquids inside it, so the Tanakhama had said you go according to the roiv. So for example, we said if you have white wine or milk in there where the color of it is not noticeably different than the mikveh, then you would go according to the roiv. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would say the concept of roiv we have to consider as if it was red wine and then see would this be enough mikveh water to dilute it so it doesn't look like wine anymore. So the Gemara says a Rami. I have a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda's own opinion. Mishnah says this: Lishul Mole Rufin, a bucket that's full of saliva. So you have. We're going to talk about later in the Silya. There are some kinds of saliva that are actually an avatuma, saliva from a zog, for example. Here we don't necessarily care about that. The point is that this bucket is partially full of saliva. Now, when you tovel it in the mikveh, the saliva, of course, saliva is a liquid. It's going to, eventually, it will get washed away by the water of the mikveh, but not necessarily right away. If you tovel that keli, keli tovel, then it's considered as if you didn't tovel it. Because the saliva is a chatzitza. Eventually, again, if you were to scrub it in there or whatever, then all the saliva would get out, and it would be a proper tefillah, but like this, you didn't do it, and therefore it's no good. Meraglayim, what about if the bucket is full of urine? So urine, we can consider as though it is actually water. That's the Gemara is going to bring up the matter of royin, but that's the Mishnah says here. Meraglayim, if it's full of urine, royin oisam kilein mayim. We can consider it as if it was water. Even though it doesn't look the same as regular water, it still is considered to be water. That's, we call it meraglayim, literally means water of the legs. So now we have the concept of hashaka. We have, if you have a keli that's full of water and you go and tovel it, you don't have to have that the water of the mikveh fills up the keli. Instead, it's enough to have that the water of the mikveh touches the water inside the keli and even a little bit. And then you have something called hashaka, which means that now the water is connected together. Now the water in the keli is bottled to the water of the mikveh, and therefore it's considered as though it's full of mikveh water. The principle of hashaka is the same principle nowadays when we have mikvahs, is you don't tovel in the reservoir of rainwater because they wouldn't be able to change it often enough, and it would get rather dirty. Instead, you have two reservoirs in a chabad skamikah, you have bor agabe bor, and some mikvahs, you have them side by side. Whatever the case, the point is that you have a hole through which the two bodies of water can touch, and that's called hashaka, and then the whole thing is considered like neg shamim, and you can tovel in it. So if the keli had been full of regular water, no question you could do hashaka. Now we're saying it's full of urine, the same concept would apply. We would say that even though it looks a little different, nevertheless, it's still considered water, and hashaka is enough. Rashi points out that when we talk about the saliva, we didn't have to say that's mole, that it's full of saliva. It would be enough if there's a small amount in it, because we're saying it's thick. But since we're mentioning in this part of the Mishnah, we're mentioning when it's full of meraglayim, then therefore by the same token, the Mishnah uses the expression that it's full of saliva, even though over there it's not really as important to say that. Continues the Mishnah. Mole mechatas. Now we're going to see. Once we go through this Mishnah, we're going to see that we seem to have a contradiction within what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Mole mechatas. Suppose that the keli is full of mechatas, of parad ramulur. So then, ad she yugu hamayim al mechatas. Then, in order for it to be tahor, you have to have more mikvah water gets into the keli than there is mechatas. In other words, you're going to have to spill out some of the mechatas until less than half of the keli is full of it, and then you can toivel it in the mikveh, and it'll be tahor. So, the Gemara says, man shamat leid isle royin. Now, which tana do we find that says this concept of royin, that we said that we have two different things, and one looks different than the other, and nevertheless we consider it as though it's the same thing? Rabbi Yehuda. That was Rabbi Yehuda. We said before that we talked before about when it has white wine or milk in it and you toivel it, then Rabbi Yehuda had said you have to consider it as though it was wine and then figure out is there enough mikvah water getting into the keli to dilute it. Well then, in that, so v'katani d'sagilei b'ruba, and we're still saying when it comes to the mechatas that you don't need you don't consider the mechatas as though it was wine, and therefore need a larger percentage of water to get into the keli to dilute it. It's enough that more than half of the keli ends up getting filled with mikvah water. So Rabbi Yehuda seems to be contradicting himself. So that's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi on various grounds, among other things. If Rashi is saying that when it comes to the Meiraglayim, Rashi is saying the Mishnah had mentioned Royin, we have to consider as though it's water, but really it's not a matter of Royin, it's a matter of we're saying the Meiraglayim is considered water. So what does that have to do with everything we were talking about before? Tosfos has a bunch of other questions. So rather, Tosfos brings a different gusa. The gusa of Tosfos is that if the keli is full of meraglayim, royin oisem kilein yayin, then we consider that meraglayim as though it was wine. And then that would mean, so it's not a matter of hashoka, it's a matter of we have to have enough mikvah water get in there, much more than half, two-thirds or more, as we get 5/6, as we discussed yesterday, in order to be mevatel the color of the wine, had it been wine. If it has saliva in it, then it's not a valid tevila because the saliva is a chitzitza. Fine. That part is not really relevant to our sugya. We're just bringing it because that's the beginning of the mission. When it's meraglayim, we consider as though it was wine, so we see it's not bottle beroy. But then when it comes to mechatas, you see that as long as you have more than half of it, is full of mikvah water, then it's kosher. Meaning, when exactly are we saying royin and when not? So the point is, according to Tosfos' explanation, also Rabbi Yehuda is contradicting himself about when we say royin and when not. Why would we say it in connection with urine, and we wouldn't say it with meiraglayim? The Shittimu Kubetis also points out that we had in the Chacham in our Mishnah, we had the Chacham said Royin as well. We had the case where the blood of the Korban was mixed with Dam Behema or Dam Chaya, and the Chachamim also said over there that Royin, that we consider that blood as though it was water and see if it's enough to dilute it. But we see that by Kodshim, we wouldn't necessarily know that that's the case by Mikveh as well. Rabbi Yehuda clearly says it by Mikveh as well. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda has contradicted himself. When do we say Royin and when not? Do we say it or do we not? The answer is, Amar Abaye Lekasha, Hodidei Hodidabe. There's a difference between Rabbi Yehuda's own opinion and the opinion of his Rebbe. His Rebbe being Rabbi Gamliel. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Meshum Rabbi Gamliel, Ein Dam Mevatel Dam. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Gamliel that blood is not mevatel blood. So we have the example that we mentioned yesterday, for example, the blood of the par and the sur on Yom Kippur, where they're not mevatel one another. So the chum, they agree, they're not mevatel one another, but that's because they're both sprinkled on the mizbeach anyway. But Rabbi Yehuda extends that to other cases that blood is not mevatel blood. So according to him, in our Mishnah, when the blood of Kodshim got mixed with other blood, it wouldn't matter how much other blood there was, or whether it was Dama Tamsis or whatever, it would still be valid to sprinkle on a Mizeach. Similarly, continues Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Gamliel, Ein Roik Mevatel Roik. Similarly, saliva is not Mevatel saliva. Namely, you have saliva of a Zog. a Zug and other people in his category, and they're called the Rambam groups them under the umbrella term Mishami Mishkov Moshe, people who make a chair or a seat or a bed or a seat or anything that they sit or lie on. Tome, so you have a Zav, a Zava, a Nida, Yeledes, all of them are in the same category. So their saliva and various other bodily secretions of theirs are considered an avatumah. So they would actually be metame, a person who touches or carries them. So now, what if you have, so suppose you have one Zav, let's say, spit into a container, and then a whole bunch of other people after him spit into it. The Chachamim would say the other saliva is mevatel, the saliva of the Zav, and therefore it's not metame. Rabbi Yehuda, quoting Rabbi Gamliel, disagrees, and says that saliva is not mevatel saliva. Actually, the context in which Rabbi Yehuda says that ein dam mevatel dam, Rashi points out, is not only as far as zrika, as in our Mishnah, but also as far as kisi adam. So you have you shechted a wild animal or a bird, and now you have to do kisi adam. Rabbi Yehuda would say, in the name of Rabbi Gamliel, that even if you had a lot of other blood spilled on top of it, such as blood from a domestic animal, nevertheless you still have to do kisi adam. And the same thing with the saliva, the ein meiraglein mevatel meiraglein. Similarly, urine is not mevatel urine. Here also you have the urine of a zov and the various other metame mishkav moshav is an avatuma. Same idea. The Chacham would say if you have a zov urinated into a container and then many other people followed him, then it'll be enough to be mevatel it. And Rabbi Yehuda says that. And Rabbi Yehuda quotes Rabbi Gamliel saying that no. Well, very well, says Abaya. So Rabbi Gamliel holds that, and Rabbi Yehuda is quoting him. But Rabbi Yehuda himself disagrees and says that you do have the concept of royin, and it's not necessarily a matter of, and therefore sometimes we can say that things are indeed bottom. That's one answer. Rabbi Omar, Rabbi says you don't need to say that. You don't need to say that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Gamliel disagree. Which in fact Tosfos points out throughout Shas, the Gemara always takes it as a given that Rabbi Yehuda holds min b'minei le'bottom. Which is essentially what he's saying over here, because he's saying that blood is not mevatel blood, and saliva is not mevatel saliva, etc. Throughout Shas, we always take it as a given that Rabbi Yehuda holds that. Now, according to Abaya and Or Sugya over here, it wouldn't be so. But it would be Rabbi Gamliel holds that, and Rabbi Yehuda quotes him. But throughout the Shas, the Gemara is taking Rava's answer over here as the final answer, as a maskana about what Rabbi Yehuda holds, and therefore we can correctly say that Rabbi Yehuda himself does hold that min b'minei le'bottle. But why is it over here when we talk about the bucket full of mechatas that was tovled in the mikveh, where Rabbi Yehuda is saying you have to have more than half of the bucket be able to be filled with mikveh water? The reason is because we're talking about where the bucket is tomei only on the outside and not on the inside. Now, b'daraisa, there's no such thing. Midaraisa, Kayla becomes Tome, it becomes Tome, and that's that. But you have certain cases like this. Because we just said that there are certain liquids that are an avatuma, Daraisa, the saliva, and the saliva of a Zav, the urine of a Zav, etc. So therefore, the Chacham eventually made a Gzera that whenever liquids become Tome, no matter what the cause, they're always Midarabanan, able to be Metame Kayla. So in other words, the same way, you might not realize, for example, that here the saliva of a zob is metamea keli on a daraisa level, so you wouldn't realize that if you didn't say that a keli that was touched by tomei liquid becomes tomei, you might mistakenly think that the same thing if it's touched by the saliva of a zob. Therefore, the Chacham made a rule that liquids are metamea keli. The liquids themselves are always considered basically a rishon l'tumah, and midrabanan, they're able to be metamea keli. Now, the difference is that the Chachamim then, when they made that Zera, they wanted to be sure that people are going to understand the difference between a Tumah Daraisa and Derabanan, because after all, when something is Tumah Derabanan, take for example if Truma is involved. If Truma then touches this Keli, Midaraisa, there's nothing wrong with that Truma. The Keli didn't become Tumah in the first place, and you'd be perfectly allowed to eat the Truma. Midrabanan, we would say it's Tumah, but we don't want you to go burn the Truma, because to allow you to burn the Truma, that you can only do if it's Tumah Daraisa. Therefore, the Chacham made a distinction and said that if this liquids touch the outside of a keli, then only the outside of the keli becomes tamei. So therefore, so that'll be a heker, that'll be a way of noticing the difference between them, and that way people will realize that this whole concept of tumas mashkin is derabanan. except when it's the except when it is in fact the liquids of a zov. So there still is a distinction, in other words, that the saliva of a zov will be metame the keli completely, whereas other liquids that are tame, for example, by touching tame food, are going to be metame the keli only the drabanon, and if they touch only the outside of the keli, then only the outside of the keli is tame. So now Rava says what we're talking about over here is a keli that is in that situation. The medina sagilahu b'cholderu. Now, mi'ikir adin, it should be enough to, it should be enough, even a tiny amount of water gets into it, because all you need is the outside of it needs to be toiveled, the lip of it needs to be toiveled, but the inside doesn't, because the whole point is we're saying that the inside does not need tefillah, the inside never became tummy. So really, it should be enough if even a tiny amount of water overflows the lip of the keli. However, says Rava, only the Chachamim made a gzera in this case that you have to toivel it properly. Because otherwise, after all, he wants to keep the mei chatas. Now, he wants to keep the mei chatas. He wants to keep them usable later on to use as part of aduma water. Now, we learned a couple of days ago, and we're going to learn again tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that if regular water falls into mei chatas, then according to the Chachamim, it plastels it, and according to the Eliezer, fine, you have an alternative, you can sprinkle twice from it, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. The reason why he says twice, but basically, in other words, if other water gets into the mei chatas, it's going to ruin you. So you're going to try, if you have a keli full of mechatas, and let's say, I mean, obviously, if you have another keli to pour it out into, you'll just pour it out into another keli temporarily, total the first keli and have done with it. But let's say you don't
what
have
What about a keli feres?
What?
What happens in that situation with a keli feres?
Well, it doesn't matter if keli feres or any other. It doesn't matter what material the keli is.
But it should matter.
It doesn't, though. With to begin with, a kli cheres is metame only from the inside. So midoraisa, a kli cheres can be metame only from the inside. Here, where tuma touched the outside of it, I don't remember actually if this din applies to kli cheres as well about the outside being able to become tuma without the inside. I don't remember that offhand. But in any case, so let's say we're not talking about cheres. Let's say we're talking about a different material where the inside and the outside are the same on a doraisa level. But here, where it was only tumas mashkin, then we're saying it's tuma only drabanan. But now what we're saying is, this keli contains mechatas in it. You may not want to. You're going to toivel the keli. You may not want that any of the mikvah water should get into the keli at all, because you want to preserve your mechatas. You want to make sure that they remain intact without any mikvah water mixed into them, because you don't want them to become puzzle. So therefore, you may, when you toivel the keli, only toivel the outside and not toivel the lip and not allow any water to flow over the lip. And that's no good. The lip has to be toiveled as well. So now, therefore, the Chachamim are going to make a gzera. The Kivin de Ikari Buya, once the Chachamim are going to make a gzera, that you have to have, that most of the keli has to be able to be filled with mechatas, then you don't need any more than that, because after all, the whole point of toveling the inside itself is a chumrah. So therefore, that would explain, says Rava. So it's not a matter of that Rabbi Yehuda is being inconsistent as far as Royin. Normally he would say Royin, that we do consider one thing to be like another, like we're saying, for example, the mei raglayim of the Mishnah that we quoted before being considered like water, or in the braisa that we had brought before, white wine or milk being considered as though it was red wine, and seeing how much you need in order to be mevatel that, how much mikvah water you need in order to be mevatel that. Only in this one case where there's mechatas involved, then we want to make sure that he's actually going to toivel the lip of the keli, and that necessarily means that some water is going to have to go into the keli. So therefore, in order to make absolutely sure that he does that, then the keli has to be able to, then we require him that the keli should be able to be at least half full with mikvah water. And then we don't care if in fact the whole thing is not full of mikvah water, because at that point, because the whole thing was a chumrah anyway. A point that the Turei Eben brings up, Julian Ashas over here, Rabbi Akiva Eger, refers to the Turei Eben, refers to the Shagas Aryeh's commentary on Chagiga, where he points out a big question over here. So we're talking about over here, we're saying a keli that's full of mechatas. Now mechatas, Torah Duma, we have many chumras in it compared to regular things of Tumah V'Tahara. The order is you have the levels of Tumah V'Tahara that apply to the Chulin. Then you have to a slight extent Maisa Sheni. Basically, the dinim of Maisa Sheni are pretty much the same as a Chulin. Then you have Tumah. Then you have Kodshim. And then highest of all, the Schatos is Torah Druma water. One of the rules that applies to Mechatos and actually also to Kodshim is this whole concept of the inside of a Keli being able to be Tahar while the outside is Tomei does not apply to Mechatos. So what are we talking? In other words, if you have a Keli where the outside is Tomei and you put Mechatos into that Keli, it does in fact become possible to Rabbanon. The inside of the Keli is not Tomei. The whole Keli is only Tomei in the first place, only to Rabbanon. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter with Chatos with Machmir. The reason for that is the Mishnah mentions in Parah, the Gemara mentions it in a few places in Shas. Actually, we learned it earlier in Or Masechta, I think, that a Kohen Tevul Yoim is able to do the Avodah. The Parah is able to shecht and burn and sprinkle and everything. The Parah Duma, where Zukim disagreed with that, so therefore they would deliberately be Metame, the Kohen, before he did the Parah Duma, in order to demonstrate that the Zukim are wrong. Once they did that, then the Chachamim started imposing many Chumras on Parah Duma so that people don't think, well, if a Tevul Yoim can do it, then we can be careless in other areas of Tumah V'Tahara with it as well. So the question then is, what do you mean that you have Rava saying you have a bucket over here where the outside is Tomei and the inside is Tahar and you have Mechatas in it? How would the Mechatas be kosher in the first place? The Torah Evan gives an answer. We're not actually talking about this was Parah Aduma water. This is water that's already been mixed with the ashes of the Parah Aduma. This is water that's ready to use to be mixed with the ashes. It's Mayim Chaim. It's water that comes from a spring and has the characteristics that make it kosher to be used for Parah Aduma water. So now it doesn't yet have the dinim of Chatas as far as a Keli with the inside and the outside, but nevertheless, he wants to save it and he wants to make sure it doesn't get ruined by the mikvah water, and therefore so now we're saying then you're going to have to ruin it because we want to make sure that the lip of the Keli gets the lip of the Keli gets toiled in the mikvah water. A different answer that's given. Rav Meir Arik gives an answer that Rabbi Yezer holds in a different Gemara that even if Mechatas become Tomei, it doesn't matter. You can still sprinkle them. Well, therefore, so they become Tomei from the Keli. So what? He still wants to be able to use them for sprinkling, and therefore we're saying no. In this case, you can't pour them off into another Keli before you toivel the Keli to be Metaho the outside, or your Mechatas are going to have to become possible, and there's no choice. So that explains that clarifies the seeming contradiction in what Rabbi Yehuda says. Basically, so again, according to Abaya, the answer is that Rabbi Yehuda is, when he says min b'mino le'botol, is not his own opinion, but Rabbi Gamliel's, and according to Rabbi, it is in fact his own opinion, and only in that case of the bucket half full of mechatas are we saying that we require him to, we require a roiv, but otherwise he would say roiv, otherwise we would consider the liquid in there as though it was wine, and you would need even more than that, more than half of it to be full of mikvah water, only in this case, where the whole concept of toveling the inside is anyway a chumrah, then Rabbi Yehuda is fine with only half of it being full of mikvah water. Okay. So now we've been discussing then this whole matter of what's bottle in what, and we were talking about min b'minoy and min b'she'en b'minoy. So Omar Rava, says, let's summarize the matter. Omar Rabbanan b'taima. There are times when the Chachamim say that one thing is that the factor as far as bittul or not is going to be the taste. And he's going to explain each one. Omar Rabbanan b'ruba. There are times when the Chachamim say it's roiv. And Omar Rabbanan b'chazusa. And there are times when the color is the deciding factor. Namely, min b'she'enei minei b'taima. So as we discussed before, then if it's min b'she'enei minei, where they have different flavors, then you have the, then you taste it and see whether, and see. And then Shulchan Aruch talks about, for example, so if, for example, we're talking about things that are mutter to Jews, and you just have restrictions between them, who can eat it? Say, for example, truma gets mixed with chulin, then you have a koyin taste it. If it's mixed with something that's an isser, then you have. And Shulchan Aruch mentions in principle you can have a goyish chef or kfila as it's called nalacha taste it and see if it can be
at the beginning of the tarubas.
Yeah, this is the beginning of the tarubas. Yeah. So in principle you would have a kfila taste it and see if he can taste the flavor of it. The Ramah writes over there that we're generally not so much on that concept, and we have the concept of bittul b'shishin. Tosfos points out that here actually we're talking on a Daraisa level. Here we're not talking, the Rava is not mentioning about the Shishim or the Meya or anything like that, which are the amounts that things are bottled, that we're usually familiar with, that things are bottled in. Therefore, that implies that we're talking about over here a Daraisa level. So Daraisa, even if it is more than 1 in 60, as long as it doesn't taste of it, then it would be fine. And that's where you have that concept of a Kfila tasting it. Tosfos goes into a bit of discussion about this whole matter of what kinds of things are, what is the story with Tam Ke'ikr? Is it in fact Daraisa? Is it not Daraisa? And various factors in that regard. One possibility is that even if Tam is Ke'ikr, maybe it's still a person doesn't get Malkus for it, and so on and so forth. So sometimes we go according to the case. As in we're saying min b'sheni mina. Min b'minoi, if it's min b'minoi and there's no difference in taste, b'ruba, then we go according to roi. Now, Tosfos points out that actually would be disagreeing with the Tana of our Mishnah, because we said in our Mishnah what it was min b'minoi, blood mixed with blood, then we said roi, and we consider the blood that it got mixed in with as though it was wine. Whereas over here, Rava is saying b'roiv, implying, in other words, so as long as you had roiv of the blood was from a korban, then you'd be fine. Whereas our Mishnah hadn't said that. And heichav de'ikah chazusa, and when there's a color involved, then we go according to the appearance of it. So when it doesn't depend, Rashi says when it doesn't depend on the taste. So here we were talking about things that are bottle or not bottle in a mikveh. The taste of the mikvah water doesn't make a difference. It shouldn't,
that's
anyway.
That's why I started laughing. You don't tell a guy, taste the mikvah to see if it...
Yes. I'll tell you, by the way, there is a story that I read many years ago of a person who literally went on the Siddur Nefesh to do just that. There's a story in Poland in the interwar years in the city of Bialystok, the mikvah, the government was out to close the mikvah and find every possible excuse to close it, and their excuse was that it's unsanitary. To make a very, very long story short, there was a yid there. There was a Jewish doctor there in town, not frum at all. And they were going to call him as an expert witness to testify that in fact the mikveh is unsanitary and dangerous to health, and therefore it has to be closed down. Kitzur HaMaisa, when it came to trial, so he's sitting over there and they ask him, so what's the story with this mikveh? It is here, here's a cup of water from it. What does it look like? In your professional opinion, yes, it's very dirty, very unsanitary. But then he picks it up and drinks it, showing it. So they ask him, is it actually hazardous to human health? So instead of answering, he picks it up and drinks it, as if to show, no, it's not dangerous to health. You see that? So far, he's hintily. So is it, what?
Even though it probably was.
Yeah, even though it probably was. What happened to him afterwards, I don't know. But the point is that there you have.
From Yid got
nonfetish. He's still, he was able to save the mikveh by his own personal Mesiris Nefesh over there, yeah. But ordinarily, yeah, you don't taste the mikveh water. So therefore, it doesn't depend on taste. It depends on color. There was actually a case in Hilchos Tarovis, for example, that Amar brings up a point that, for example, you use an egg white to make a food look whiter, then chazusa becomes important, because then you're not putting it in for the flavor so much, you're putting it in for the color. So that's taka factor where that would make a difference.
Isn't there be a difference between blood being mixed together? The blood being mixed.
So that was min b'minoi. That's min b'minoi. That's
right. But I'm just saying the min b'minoi of min b'min, even if both cases would be min b'minoi, one is an isra and one's not an isra.
Right. But the point is that since it's min b'minoi, we're saying that's only b'roiv. So our Mishnah had said it's not b'roiv. Our Mishnah had said roiv.
Comparing the min b'minoi aspect of
Okay, so actually, a point that Sfasemis brings up actually is that why should there be a difference whether the taste is relevant or not? So if chazusa is important and we're saying that's not bottle, then what does it matter? What does it matter what the taste is, iser or heter? So Sfasemis brings up the raiva that explains the point. That's the point. The principle of tam ke'ikr is based on the fact when you're eating eating things, then the taste is important. A pasuk says v'cheich oichu yitam loy. The food is tasty to the palate. So when it comes to things that you're eating, then the taste is important. But here, when we're talking about the mikveh, where that's not a factor, then we ignore that altogether. So we ignore that altogether, and therefore we just go according to the appearance. Okay. All right. So the Gemara continues. Now, let's go back. Let's rewind to Ayin Ches Amud Aleph. We started the sugya by Rish Lakish saying that Rish Lakish was saying over there that Tigul, Noiser, and Tomei, that a person mixed together and ate, then they're potter. Because he says, because inevitably you're going to have a roiv in one part of his mouth compared to the other, and therefore it'll be mevatel. And so he says, he holds that Isur and mevatel and Zeh Zeh. We discussed over there Rashi learns that we're talking about that he didn't mix them beforehand. He puts them in his mouth and chews them, and now in the chewing they get mixed up in his mouth, and at some point you have a piece of the pigle, for example, is stuck between two pieces of noiser, and therefore we can consider as though it's bottle beroiv to them, and therefore it's reduced from the kazayas to pigle, and therefore you can't be mechayiv him for pigle. Tosfos have learned that it's talking about that he mixed them before he put them in his mouth. Whatever the case, Rish Lakish had said that from that we learn that he's surin mevatlin zeh zeh. Now, upliga de Rabbi Lazar. Now that disagrees with Rabbi Lazar. The Amar Rabbi Lazar, kashem shein mitzvahs mevatlas luasu, just as mitzvahs are not mevatl one another, as we're going to give an example in a minute, kach ein isurin mevatlin zuasu, the same way isurin are not mevatl one another either, and therefore if a person were to eat pigol and noiser, for example, mixed together, he would in fact be chayav malkus. Rabbi Shlokesh had said, first of all, there's vittel, but he had also mentioned the point he can't get malchus anyhow because hasurah suffic. So we're not even dealing with the hasurah suffic angle on it, says Rabbi Lazar. The yisurim are not mevatel each other in the first place, and therefore we don't care that right now there's a piece of pigle that happens to be chewed between two pieces of noiser. It's not bottle, you have a full kazayas of pigle and a full kazayas of noiser, and therefore he's going to be chayav, and therefore he's going to be chayav for now.
Is it so similar to the Sikh of the Abba and Chelik Tess Zayin? About the candy, the story of the Pidik Rebbe with the candies.
Uh-huh.
It's the Rebbe Rasham.
Rebbe Rasham, about candies, yeah.
It's Chomet, say, is there Toya or is there Etzim? So meaning...
I know the Sikh, but I'm not real familiar with the ins and outs of it.
Over here, Mitzvah... Yisurim Mevatlin says that because it's an Isur Etzem, because it's an entity for itself, so even if you're going to mix it, it's still in existence.
Huh, okay.
If you say it's a Toyer, so then it's mixed up, and then it changes its name.
Got it. Okay. So the Gemara says, Man Shamat Leidama Ein Mitzvahs Mevatlin Zuzu. Well, which Tana do we find holds of this concept that mitzvahs are not Mevatlin one another? The answer is Hillel. That would be the opinion of Hillel, the Tanya, the Lunan of Raisa. Omru all of Al Hillel Zokin, and he lived still when the Bis Mitzvah was standing, and there was a Korban Pesach. Shoya Korchon Bavas Achas, he would wrap together the Pesach Matzah and Mora together, the Oichon and eat it. Mishum Shenemer Al Matzahs and Merorim Yechru, because the Pesach says that you eat the Korban Pesach with Matzahs and Merorim. So he understood that it means that all of them have to be eaten together. Tosfos points out this would only work in the time when the Bis Mikdash was standing, because after the Churban, the din is like this. The Churban Pesach, obviously, we have only when the Bis Mikdash is standing. Morer were chayav in Midaraisa only when there's a Bis Mikdash. Midaraisa, Morer applies only when there's a Churban Pesach to go with it. That we eat Morer nowadays is Dirabanan. Hillel's method wouldn't have worked, says Tosfos, if he lived after the Bis Mitzvah was destroyed. He would have to eat them separately, otherwise we would say that mitzvahs are mevato one another. This is one Zeraisa, one Zerabonon. But here, if they're all Zeraisa, then we're saying that no. Tosfos actually asks, though, that, wait a minute. Earlier in the Sugya, Tosfos had mentioned a point that when do we say that, now like this, when Rish Lakish had talked about, for example, Pigul and Noiser and Tomei, we're talking about where it was just a Kazayas of each. So then we can talk about that, that a little bit of the Kazayas gets wedged in between other pieces and therefore it's bottled. But how do you know? Maybe over here he took two kazesim of matzah and two kazesim of morah and two kazesim of korban pesach. And therefore, even a little bit of it gets ready within the other, then it still wouldn't be mevatel. So Tosfos leaves the question open. The Sfasemis gives an answer. There's only so much a person can swallow at a time. The Gemara tells us in various places, ain beis ablia machzik yosim kaveitza. You can't swallow more than the size of an egg at a time. And three kazesim, there's different opinions how many kazesim make up a kabeitza, but one opinion is that it's three. So in that case, the maximum he could eat would indeed be exactly a kazayis of each one. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to swallow it all at once. And the whole point is he's holding that you have to swallow it all at once. So therefore, there's no room for Tosfos' question because of necessity. We are talking about only a kazayis of each. Anyway, the point is we see that Hillel holds that mitzvahs, when they're all daraisa, are not mevatel one another. There was quite a bit of discussion, and mainly in the Sefer Pesachim, of course, where this comes up. Are we saying that the other chachamim disagree with him? Here the Gemara seems to be saying that Hillel holds this, implying the other chachamim disagree with him. Is that in fact so? Or is it that maybe not? Maybe Hillel's doing it. The Chacham is saying you don't have to do it that way. They hold that al matzah sim ruim yechlu doesn't mean you have to eat them together. It means you can eat them one after the other. We know that sometimes the word al means the samuch means next. So they could hold that. They don't necessarily have to argue with the premise that mitzvahs mevatlas that in mitzvahs mevatlas is a zoo. In addition, also, Mephoshim talk about, okay, so how does this show that Hillel in fact holds Ein Mitzvah and Rakhla Zuzu? And one answer is, in fact, because if it was a one-off, if he did it one time, then you could say maybe, but to be Mekayim and Mitzvah, but the way he holds. But once we're saying, every year by his Seder, he would do this, then it's not just a matter of that he's doing it as a one-off in order to be choshish for that. It really means that he holds in mitzvahs mivatlas zuasu, and therefore every single year, that's Tosfos gives this answer in Pesachim, that if he held that in general mitzvahs mivatlas zuasu, then he would say you're allowed to, but you don't have to. So then he would say, fine, one year, I'll do that possibility. But if he does it every single year, shows that he holds that mitzvahs, that in mitzvahs mivatlas zuasu. This Chassamus gives a different answer that if he held mitzvahs mevatlas zuasu, what he would have done is fine. Pesach and Moriv he could eat together because those go together on a daraisa level anyway. But matzah, which itself is a separate mitzvah and it's a separate one of the 613 mitzvahs to eat matzah, the erev teichlu matzahs, and we have nowadays that's the only eating that's daraisa, then he would have done that separately. But because he didn't do that, because he only ate the korach together, then therefore that shows the old mitzvahs mevatlas zuasu. Nowadays, taka, since we don't have the Kapurim Pesach, and therefore matzah is daraisa and morer is derabanan. The Gemara actually in Pesachim discusses, I think there are opinions that matzah even nowadays is derabanan, but I think the accepted opinion is that no, matzah is daraisa, morer is derabanan. Yeah. So therefore, it's a taka, we can't be yotze with Hillel's method, and therefore we do both. We do eat like him, zeicha l'mikdash. But we have to eat the matzah and moros separately in order to be able to be yotze. So we see, therefore, so there is this idea of ein mitzvahs mevatlas zuasu. Sort of a law that says by the same token, isurim are not mevatel one another. Okay, let's talk more about this matter of being mevatel things. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa. Chausen shel zav. If you have earthenware kalim or broken pieces of earthenware kalim that it shall zav v'zava that had previously been used in to it's a bucket or whatever that was used by a zav or a zava to urinate into. Now the urine gets soaked into the cheres, and therefore so even though we're talking about broken pieces and normally once an earthenware kalim is broken that it's not matama anymore. But here, the fact that you have inside, embedded in it, is this urine, and if you were to heat up the cheres, for example, then it would come out. Then it's still metame when a person carries it. So pam rishon v'sheni. So now a person poured water into it to rinse it out. The first or the second time tame, then it's still tame because you haven't been mevatel the urine yet. Shlishi tahor. But once you rinse it a third time, then it'll be tahor. When would that be talking about? That would be when you rinsed it out with water. But suppose you didn't rinse it with water. Suppose you rinsed it with urine, but urine from a tahor person. So you want to be mevatel the urine from the zov that was in there with tahor urine. So now, filo asili tome, even if you did it the 10th time, then it would be tome because min b'mino and it's not bottled. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says that no, even he did it the third time with urine rather than with water, then already it'll be tahor because he holds that min b'mino is bottle. Tosfos points out, by the way, in this connection, first of all, that this is negeya, not just as far as chamber pots that a zava have been using. This is also negeya as far as questions of kalim that goyim have used to drink wine out of. What do we need to do in order to make them that now we can use them for kosher drinking? If it's clay cheres, you need to rinse them three times, as we're saying over here. If it's made out of other materials, then even one time rinsing is enough.
It's interesting by the Maim Shalom, one of God's year it is, when by Maim Shalom, you see one of the years when Chesman tests that Herba comes out from Maim Shalom and Lepkovsky gives them the cup.
Mm-hmm.
Herba rinses it three times.
Interesting. Okay. Rinses what? The cup that he's going to draw Maim Shalom with?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I guess that's an extra formula, yeah. Okay. Okay. So, the Gemara says, "Man shamat leidama min b'mina leibotol." Now, who is the Tanakama of this Braisa? Which Tana have we been saying all this time that min b'mina leibotol? Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda. And as we said, on Amud Aleph, Abaya would hold that's only Rabbi Yehuda quoting Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Yehuda himself would disagree with it. But Rabbi had given a different answer, according to which Rabbi Yehuda himself holds that min b'mina leibotol. And throughout Shas, it's a given that we take that. So therefore, so now the Gemara, the summer to Gemara, can be saying Rabbi Yehuda holds that way. Well, Uraminu, though I have a contradiction because a Braisa says as follows: Ishtan shetvaatu nida, linen that was spun by a nida. Now, when you're spinning linen, you have to constantly be wetting it with saliva in order for the fibers to stick together. In a different place, in Ksuvus, the Gemara mentions, for example, that the common thing that the women would do around the house, one of the common household tasks which helps contribute to the family economy, would be to spin wool. The Gemara says there, you can't require her to spin linen because, as we're saying over here, she has to constantly wet it. She also has to, she constantly has to be putting it between her lips to wet it, and over time that'll cause her lips to swell up and come unattractive. See, so we see that's the process, at least back then, of making linen thread is you constantly have to be wetting it with saliva. So now it dries up. I'm a sitoy toher. If somebody moves that linen thread, then he's toher because the saliva is matame only when it's wet. The imahoya lach, but if the linen was still wet from the saliva, mesitei tomei mishum mashkepia, that in fact somebody who moves it is in fact going to be tomei because of the liquid from her mouth, because like we said before, the saliva of a is an avatoma. Rabbi Yehuda continues. Also, if you wet it again with water, so if you take this dry linen thread and wet it, and now it makes the saliva in it wet again. Tomei mishum mashkepia. Then again, a person who moves that linen thread is going to be tomei because of the saliva. Because now the saliva became liquid. So now the Gemara asks after the tshuva. It sounds like no matter how many times you wetted it, it's still going to be tummy. So whereas Rabbi Yehuda had said in the previous Braisa, which we said the Tanakama of the previous Braisa is Rabbi Yehuda, he says that once you rinsed out the keli with the urine soaked into it three times, and it's enough to be matare. Why over here when you say again and again and again, no matter how many times you wet it, it's still going to be matare. Tosfos, by the way, discusses over here if the saliva is still not that old and you would be able to wet it and it has the same consistency as before, then it's matame anyway. Here we're talking about where it's really completely dry, and nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be saying that no matter how many times you rinse it, it's still going to be tummy. The answer is Amar Papa Shiny Roik to Korir. The difference is that saliva really penetrates very deeply into the linen. It's very difficult to get it out. The urine into the kli cheres, not quite so much. So therefore, fine. You rinse it a couple of times and you're good enough. But when it comes to the saliva in the linen, then no matter Rabbi Yehuda is holding, no matter what, it's really embedded in there. And therefore, no matter how many times you rinse it, you're never going to completely get it out. So that covers this whole matter of bitul, of min m'mina, and min m'shein, and min, and all that. Now, the Mishnah continued, Nis'ara b'dama p'sulin. We said that if the blood of Korbanos gets mixed in with the blood of p'sulin, we said yishofech la'ama, then we said that you should pour it, you should pour it into the ama, into the water channel that's in the into the water channel that's in the Azara, where things that are possible are often thrown into. Rabbi Eliezer had said that it's kosher. So the Gemara says, "B'mai kamifli, what is the underlying machloikus?" Now, Tosfos says, "What do you mean? What's the underlying machloikus?" We said it's a machloikus of royin. We said before, we've been discussing this whole time, this matter of royin, whether we can consider that whether we can consider that what it's mixed in with is considered to be something else or not. So, why don't we just say that? The Mishnah is saying it's out of the dam of psulin, implying that even if you have a little amount of fossil blood in it, you shofach la'ama. Why don't we just say that? Rabbi Eliezer is saying that royin, we can consider that fossil blood as though it was water or what have you, and therefore, so it's not enough to be mevatel the appearance of the blood, and therefore we're good. So Tosfos explains because in the next Mishnah, which we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, Rabbi Eliezer uses the expression roya. And then we're going to have an example where we have blood got mixed together, and Rabbi Eliezer says roya. But here in our Mishnah, he didn't mention that point. Therefore, the Gemara assumes that's not the real reason for that. Even though we've been talking about roya the whole time, that's not really the basis of his opinion. There must be something else. And then also Tosfos makes another point that which Rashi says over here as well, that there's a difference between things that are commonly found in the Azara or not. Blood of a behemoth, of a chulin or of a chaya or whatever is not commonly found in the Azara, and therefore we're not going to make any gzeiros, as the Gemara is going to discuss over here. But when it comes to blood of psulin, then they're common enough, therefore we understand why the Chacham are not going to want you to sprinkle it, but why does Rabbi Eliezer allow? So Amar Rav Zvid, the Gozrin Gzeira B'Mikdash Kamifligi, the Machloikas is whether we make a Gzeira in the Bismikdash to Pasul Kodshim, where they would have been otherwise kosher. Marasava Gozrin, or Marasava La Gozrin. The Tanakama holds that we make the Gzeira, and therefore, so we don't want to have, so if it was mixed with Dam Psulim, or Dam Akamsis, the blood that dribbles out, and then is also not kosher, to sprinkle on the Mizbeach, so even if it's not a matter of Bittul, we don't want to make the mistake and allow it to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach, even when it is Bottle, or a different explanation is that we don't want to make the mistake and think that it's kosher to sprinkle them even Be'ain, even when they're by themselves, So that's Tosfos makes that point, and Rashi Ksaviyad, actually a couple of blocks earlier, made the point and saying and that if we allow it, we're going to think that blood that's possible itself is allowed to be sprinkled, and that's certainly not the case. So whatever the case, the point is that Rabbi Zvid says the Chacham are going to say you make such gzeiras, and the Umar Saba in Gozrin, and Rabbi Yezid says you're not going to make gzeiras like that. The Chacham do not want to ruin Kodshim just because of a gzeira. So therefore, as long as you have that there's not so much fossil blood, only if there's enough that the appearance of the kosher blood would be nisbatel in it, then yeah, but otherwise not. Rav Papa says no. Everybody agrees that when it comes to Torbanos, you can make zeris and make things possible if necessary. The machlokas over here would be, so according to Rav Zvid, it comes out they're arguing about both of the cases in the Sefer of our Mishnah, both when it's mixed with blood of psulin and with blood of tamsis. According to the Papa, when it comes to blood of psulin, Rabbi Eliezer would agree that it's possible to sprinkle. The machlokas is strictly when it's mixed with dama tamsis. So the hoch of the dama tamsis motzi the rabbis al dama nefesh kamitzvi. The machlokas is how likely is it that dama tamsis is going to be more than the dama nefesh, such that it would be mevatelin. The Tanakama holds that it is entirely possible for that to be. So now again, people are going to think that even when it was bottle, or even just a sprinkle, the Dama Nefesh by itself is going to be good enough. Omar Savaloy Shiach, whereas Rav Eliezer holds it's unlikely for that to be, and therefore there's no need to make Shavzela. Tosfos points out why isn't Rabbi Yehuda saying over here ain dam mevatel dam and say that it doesn't matter. So that's what Tosfos is saying. The question is not so much that you might mistakenly sprinkle it in a mixture like that, where there's more pusle. Rather the Gzeira is more about that you might sprinkle it by itself rather than So, and then Tosfos also brings a different Gersa that Rapapa says the full armor ain't goes in, that everybody agrees. You don't make Zedus, but Tosfos says Peter is a Mishuna. That's a very strange explanation. The proper Gersa is the way we have it, that Rapapa is saying we don't make Zedus, or that everybody agrees. You don't make Zedus, but the question is, how likely is it that the Damatamsis will be moved? Well, the Gemara says, Vishlemel Rav Papa, and the Katoni Yisrael, Bedam Apsul, and Yishrafa Fa'ama, or Yibetam Atamsis, Yishrafa Fa'ama. According to the Papa, we understand why the Mishnah has to mention those two cases separately, because Rabbi Eliezer is arguing only in the one of them. He agrees with when it's mixed with Dam Apsul, and he disagrees when it's mixed with Dam Atamsis. Elul of Zvid, Le Avinu Velisninu, but according to the Zvid, why don't you just combine them together? Mishara Bedam Apsul, and Bedam Atamsis, Yishrafa Fa'ama, put them together, because according to the Zvid, they're arguing on both cases. And the Gemara says, you're right, Kasha, that is a Kasha on Rav Zvid's explanation. It's not a Tsyupta, but nevertheless, that is a Kasha on, according to him, why the Mishnah would be formulated that way.
But the sum